Well, today I've got a message I'm really excited about sharing with you because it's going to help so many of you where you're at right now. And for others, it's going to be something that we need to file away for when this kind of situation visits us. But as we get into our study again of Kids Stuff for Adults, we're going to do this summer. And Kids Stuff for Adults, for those of you who are new to the bridge or guests, is in the summertime, the last two summers, we've been revisiting many of the stories that we teach our children about in Sunday school and in church, but never revisit as adults. And so we're going back and revisiting some of those great Bible stories and great Bible characters and looking at them from adult perspective. As we prepare to do that again this week, I want to remind you of an important New Testament passage, Romans 8:28, that says this, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." Again, he works towards the good in what? All things, doesn't he? Now, this is especially true and especially pertinent to us during the hard times of our life. And today, we're going to look at an entire book. We're going to do a little differently. If you notice that in your bulletin, I have an entire book of the Bible, four chapters written out for you. And if you have your bulletin, take that. If not, and you have your Bible, you can open your Bible to it. It's the eighth book of the Bible. Follows the book of Judges. If not, I'm going to be reading it to you. It'll be kind of like a bedtime story, but hopefully you won't go to sleep with this one, that you'll stay awake through it. But I'm going to visit it. But this story demonstrates very powerfully that New Testament verse that God works for the good for all those who love him and are called according to his purpose, and especially during hard times. So through this beautiful biblical story of Ruth, and there's two books in the Bible that bear the name of a woman. One is Esther, and we talked about her last summer in Kids Stuff for Adults, and Ruth. So these are important women because they teach us important values. And we can learn from our heroine in this story, Ruth, how to handle hard times. So you ready to go?
Yes.
All right, let's look at Ruth, chapter 1, verse 1. "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth, and they had lived there about 10 years. Both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband." I want to stop there because I want you to get the full impact of what's going on here. Now, we're talking about hard times, but what just happened to these women was desperate times, absolutely desperate times. In the ancient world, it was definitely a man's world. Man was king. Women had very few, if any, rights. And it was said of those days that a woman without a man is a woman without hope. That's how desperate it was. Women who found themselves in this situation as widows in this day and time often had to turn to begging. They were homeless, and they turned to begging for food so they could live another day. Many of them had to even turn to prostitution to be able to feed themselves and survive another day. So these ladies didn't just fall on hard times. They fell on desperate times in a day, in a culture where a woman without a man was a woman without hope. As the story continues, verse 6, "When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people, providing food to them," so there's now food again in Israel, "she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughter-in-laws, 'Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband.'" Now, again, let me pause to set this story up for you so you understand what's going on here. All right, they're in desperate situations. Now, it would seem like Naomi is being very insensitive and unloving to her daughters-in-law and thinking only of herself. And she says, listen, you guys, you go back home. You go back to the homes of your mothers, and maybe God will bless you and you'll find husbands and you'll get out of this horrible predicament that we find ourselves in. That might seem insensitive, but actually it was extremely practical and even loving. Because once again, these women were Moabite women. Now, you got to understand the relationship between the Israelites, the Jews, and the Moabites. It was not a friendly, amicable relationship. They hated each other. The Jews looked down on the Moabites. Remember, the Moabites were the descendants of the incestuous relationship of Lot with one of his daughters. Remember after Sodom and Gomorrah? We learned about that last summer in Kids Stuff for Adults. And when God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, they fled to a cave. And the two daughters of Lot got him drunk, and one night one slept with them, and another night the other slept with them. They both were impregnated by their father and gave birth to two sons, Ammon and Moab. Ammon became the head of the Ammonites. Moab became the head of the Moabites. So ultimately, the Moabites settle east of where Israel is today in the desert area, and they become a very, very evil, evil people. They are a plague to the Israelites. They're constantly invading them. That's what Gideon was about in his battle with the Moabite people. And they also worship the god that they called Chemosh. And in worshiping Chemosh, part of their ritualistic in their worship was to sacrifice their own children to the god. They would literally take a baby, one of their babies, and as proof of their devotion to Chemosh, they would sacrifice, they would kill that baby. Therefore, God put a curse on the Moabites. Ultimately, he completely wiped them off the face of the earth by the Assyrians later on. But he put a curse on them, and they become a detested and hated people, especially among the Jews who served God Jehovah. So, Naomi knew that being Moabites, they would not be welcome people in the land of Israel. So she said, listen, it's better for you just to go back home to your people. Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud. And they said to her, we will go back with you to your people. But Naomi said, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait till they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? Now, I know right now you're going, ooh, what is that? What is she talking about? Is she out of her mind? Now, in this day and time, in the culture, and even in the religious law of Moses, there was a provision for what was called levirate marriage. Levirate marriage went this way, that if in a family a brother who had no children died, then it became the responsibility of one of the deceased brother's brothers to take upon himself that deceased brother's wife and to have a child with that wife. And that child would bear the name of the deceased brother so that his memory could live on throughout Israel and would also become the heir to whatever inheritance that brother was due to have. That was called levirate. So she's basically saying this. So what are you going to do? You're going to wait and see if I get married again, and I'm going to have some more sons, and then you can wait until they grow up and you can become one of their wives? You know, a ridiculous scenario. And she's trying to show how ridiculous that was. In other words, there was no hope for them, because she's too old to have kids, and so they better go back to their families. So going on, she says then, no, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me. Verse 14, chapter 1. At this they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem, When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the woman exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" Now, they get back to Israel, and they get back to Bethlehem, the city that she and Elimelech had come from, the city of their origin, and the whole town is stirred. Now, it's not just stirred because Naomi has returned, but it's stirred because Naomi has returned with in tow a Moabite woman. A Moabite. They hate the Moabites. It plays over and over again into this story. You have to understand this relationship to understand the dynamics of this story and God's provision of Romans 8:28 in this story. So the whole town is turned upside down. Verse 20, "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Lord Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me, and the Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." And so she comes back, and they say, "Naomi, Naomi." She says, "Don't call me Naomi anymore." See, the name Naomi in Hebrew meant lovely. It meant pleasant. That was its connotation. And she says, "I'm not lovely anymore. I'm not pleasant anymore. You call me Mara," which means bitterness. She, because God has turned on me. God has afflicted me. God is punishing me. God has abandoned me. I'm no longer lovely. I am an outcast in our society. Don't call me Naomi anymore. Desperate, desperate times, even back in Israel. Chapter 2. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, get it again, see, over and over again, it's emphasizing the Moabite. Why? Because she's not welcome here. She is not liked here. She's not part of the Jewish family. So Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Another provision of the Mosaic law was this, that God had made a provision that when farmers were harvesting their crops, that they didn't pick up every single crop that had fallen on the ground, that they allowed some of the crop to stay on the ground. They didn't pick the ground clean so that poor people, homeless people, could go and pick up the remnants. So they had something to eat for them and their families, at least for the harvest season. So this was a provision. So Ruth said, "Let me go out and I'll just pick up the leftovers. So Naomi, we have something to eat." So going on, it says, Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of the harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" The overseer replied, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather from the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now except for a short rest in the shelter." Now, we might think here that when Boaz asked the question, "Who's this woman?" that he just gets an informative response. But I've got to believe that in the cultural setting, that foreman of the harvester said, "Oh, she's a Moabite woman that came back with Naomi." And she did. She came here this morning and she said, "Oh, please let me just pick up the remnants. Oh, please." And she'd been here all day. That woman been here all day. And she hadn't stopped pestering us except to get a drink of water. So I'm sure that his response was not just informative. It was prejudice. It was a racial slur against her. And so Boaz says, chapter 2, verse 8 now, says to Ruth, unexpected turn of events here, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes and you notice me a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread, and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvester, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed is the man who took notice of you." So she comes back, and she comes back with all this food. And Naomi is dumbfounded. See, because Naomi knew that as a Moabite woman, she was not going to be readily accepted by her own people, the Jews. They were not going to, she might go to field, to field, to field, to field, and they might have said, "You get out of here, you filthy Moabite. Get out of here." So she comes back with all this food. Naomi is dumbfounded. She goes, "Where did you get all this? Whose field did you work in?" She didn't expect Ruth to come back with anything. Story goes on. She says, Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, verse 21, then Ruth said, the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they have finished harvesting my grain.'" Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, daughter-in-law, to go with the woman who worked for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed again." So again, she's warned her, stay with this guy. In fact, in verse 20, she said, "Blessed is this man. He has not stopped showing kindness to the living and dead." She said, "This man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Now, let me stop there to explain to you what she's talking about. I talked to you about the law of the levirate marriage, to where a brother would take on a deceased brother's wife and have a child with her so that his name could be continued, the deceased brother's name. Now, if there, as in the case of this family, there were no brothers to take on that widow, there was another provision within the law of Moses called the kinsman redeemer, and here translated the guardian redeemer. And that was, if there were no immediate biological family members, then that responsibility or that right would pass on to an external family member. So when Ruth comes back and says, "Yeah, I went to this guy, Boaz was his name, I think, is with a field." And she, Boaz? Then he goes, "He is one of our kinsman redeemers. He is one who could take care of us, could accept the responsibility of providing for us." So she says, "You stick with him. You'll be safe in his field." So she stays there and she continues to harvest through the entire harvest season. They have plenty of food. But the harvest season ultimately ends. And we come to chapter 3. Now, ladies, how many of you just enjoy a great love story? You like that? Okay, this could be turned into a movie, you know. It could be a beautiful thing. So now we're going to get in. Naomi is going to play the part of a matchmaker. Chapter 3, verse 3. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi said to her daughter, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for. Now, Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there until he's finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he's lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." Now that sounds strange, right? But Naomi's got it going here, boy. She goes, "Ooh, we have an opportunity here. Because that Boaz, he is one of our eligible kinsman redeemers. This guy can take us places. This guy can rescue us from the desperate situation that we're in." So she says, "All right, Ruth, now here's what you're going to do. You go get a good shower. You take a nice bath. You get cleaned up. You put on your finest perfume. You put on your nicest clothes. and you go down and you scout out Boaz. Now, don't talk to him until he's finished eating and drinking, because you never interfere with a man when he's eating and drinking. That's a side note, ladies. He says, but when you note where he goes and lays down, where he goes lay down, after he falls asleep, you go there and you uncover his feet. Now, that sounds strange, doesn't it? But again, this is a Jewish cultural custom. All right, so what's going on here? Let's look on. Verse 5, I will do whatever you say, Ruth says. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned and there was a woman lying at his feet. I am your servant, Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family. Now, what's happening here, see, is he wakes up and he sees this woman, senses this woman lying down at his feet. And he's startled. He says, what is this? And she says, I'm your servant, Ruth. He knows who she is. She's been working for him. And she said, spread your garment over me. In other words, here's what she's doing. She is giving an offhanded proposal to Boaz. She's saying, will you consider marrying me? Will you consider being my guardian redeemer? Will you consider rescuing me from my terrible circumstances? Verse 10, the Lord bless you, my daughter, he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I. In other words, he says, there's somebody else who has the right over my right. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. So she lay at her feet, at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, no one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor. In other words, don't tell anybody about what we've talked about. You just go back. You leave before anyone's up and around, before anyone can recognize you're here. You just go back and let me take care of this. He also said, bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out. When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and placed the bundle on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, how'd it go? Can you imagine? Naomi probably pacing all night and thinking all night. She got back. No sooner did Ruth come in the door. She go, put that thing. Tell me the story. Come on. Don't leave out any details. Tell me what happened. What happened? What happened? What happened? You can just picture it, right? Then she told everything Boaz had done for her and added, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Now, he wasn't just giving food to them. What he was doing is he was sending back a good faith offering. In other words, Naomi knew what that meant. She understood that Boaz sent that as a good faith offering, that he would keep his word for everything that he had told to Ruth. Verse 18. Then Naomi said, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. So Naomi says to Ruth, all right, we've done everything we can do. Now don't do anything else. Don't go anywhere. Don't say anything. Let's just sit right here. Let's stay tight and let's see how this thing plays out. All right, verse 4, chapter 4. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there, just as the guardian redeemer had mentioned came along. In other words, this one who had the right over him to assume this opportunity came into town. Boaz says, come over here, my friend, sit down. I want to talk with you about something. Can't you just see this playing out? Here this guy, he's just coming into town one day. Boaz has already pre-positioned himself, sees the guy coming. He says, hey, Fred, come on, have a seat over here, buddy. We haven't seen each other. Let's kind of catch up on things. I got something I want to talk to you about. So Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, sit here, and they did so. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. In other words, he goes, I want to remind you that there's some property. There's an opportunity here for you. And you're first in line. You remember that Naomi has just come back, and our relative Elimelech has died, and his property's open, and you have the first right of refusal on that property. So if you buy it, then you go ahead and buy it. But if you don't want to buy it, then I'm going to buy it. So he says it's your choice. You do whatever you want to do. And the guy says then, I'll do it. I'll redeem it. I'm going to buy that property. Oh, man. Oh, no. There goes the love story. There's a fly in the ointment in the story. He says, sounds good. Yeah, I can use some more land. I'll go ahead and I'm going to exercise my right of owning that property. Now, Boaz is a clever guy. In verse 5. He says, then Boaz says, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. At this, the guardian redeemer said, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I can't do it. Boaz is smart. He says, now he said, okay, yeah, that's fine. It's your right. You go ahead and we'll get the deal. All the witnesses are here and we can seal this deal right now. You can own the property. He said, but don't forget now that there's some other things that come with this, not just the property. There's a couple women you have to start taking care of. And when the guy was reminded of it, he said, oh, wait a minute. I forgot that I got to take care of these women too. And one of them's a Moabite. He said, nah, it might endanger my inheritance. In other words, it might split what I want to give to my children now too thin, or he's going to have to bring this Moabite into his family, and he doesn't want to do that. He says, nah, I'm out. You do it if you want to do it. And so, it goes on to say in verse 7, now in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. They didn't have notary republics, you know, that stamped the thing. They just gave him the shoe. Here, the deal's done. I wonder if they gave it back. Frame it, put it on the mantle. You know. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself, and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses. Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now there's a whole historical lesson there I don't have time to share with you. So verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And all God's people said, ah, what a beautiful love story. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. Wow, what a story, huh? What a beautiful story. What a beautiful end to this story. An amazing story that has some amazing lessons that are very practical for me and for you. Especially in times that are hard, when hard times hit. In fact, in this story, in the book of Ruth, you actually see how to respond and how not to respond to hard times. Naomi teaches us how not to respond. She responds with bitterness. She responds with anger. She responds with self-pity. She responds with anger towards God and blaming God. Oftentimes, that's exactly how we respond. We turn on God and say, God, why would you allow this to happen to me? God, where are you? God, and we get bitter and we get angry. She said, don't call me Naomi anymore. I'm not lovely. I'm not pleasant anymore. And when hard times come, we can get pretty unlovely. But we have a choice to make. So we can choose the way of Naomi, or we can choose the way of Ruth. So what does that look like? When hard times come, what can we learn from Ruth? Well, when hard times hit, choose your God, your gods carefully. Naomi said to Orpah and said to Ruth, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back to her. Said, look, you go back with her. She's going back to her culture. She's going back to her people. She's going back to her God. You go back with her. See, Orpah did what any reasonable woman would have done in this situation. See, our gods are whoever or whatever we put our hope in when hard times hit. See, so when hard times hit, we need to choose our God carefully. Desperate times hit Ruth. But instead of going back to Chemosh, instead of going back to her gods, she said, your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. See, we need to choose our gods carefully. Some of us will choose the gods of trying to manipulate other people to save us out of our situation. Some of us will choose the God of self-medication, and we'll try to self-medicate our anger, or self-medicate our fear, and we'll use alcohol, we'll use food, we'll use gambling, we'll use spending, we'll use sex, we'll use whatever, and we try to numb ourselves and numb the feelings and the experience that we're having. Some will choose the gods of their old ways. And like Naomi, they'll say, God, this Christianity stuff is a bunch of bunk. It doesn't work. Look at it. I'm miserable. My life isn't going the way I want to. And so I'm going back to my old friends. I'm going back to my old ways. Well, in every situation, that is one of our choices. But remember, we all have the freedom to make our own choices. However, we do not have the freedom to choose our own consequences. When hard times come, better be very careful about who or what we turn to. When hard times hit us, stay engaged. It's so important. Got to stay engaged. Ruth went back to this strange country, back to a country that she was not welcome in. It would have been very logical for her, just for her own safety, if nothing else, to stay inside, stay indoors, isolate herself, get in a corner and just weep and just hope for the best. But Ruth chose instead to stay engaged. She went to Naomi and said, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain. She said, you know what? We got to eat something. And both of us sitting around here just worrying about everything and complaining and getting angry and bitter is not going to feed us. I'm going to get up. I'm getting out of the house. I'm going to go do something so that we've got something maybe to eat tonight. Leaving, Naomi never expected her to come back with anything. And Ruth may have never expected to come back anything, but she stayed engaged. And as it turned out, coincidentally, she happens across the field of Boaz, one of the kinsmen redeemers. See, that wasn't coincidental at all. Because she chose the right God, and she stayed engaged, God was free to lead her someplace. And he led her to her ultimate kinsman redeemer. See, when hard times hit us, we need to stay engaged. The natural human tendency when hard times hit us is to do what? Is to isolate ourselves. Is to draw away. To get bitter like Naomi did. To become angry with God. to become paralyzed in our fear of our circumstances. And what we tend to do, what our natural reaction is to shut down. But what we learn from the story of Ruth here is that's the exact opposite thing of what we should do. We need to, when trouble comes, when hard times hit, we need to get engaged in life. We need to get engaged in doing things. We need to not isolate ourselves. We need to not sit and wallow in self-pity. We need to get up and do something that is productive, something that's responsible, something that God may able to be able to use in a way that we can't even imagine. See, we've got to stay engaged. We've got to stay humble when hard times hit. Got to stay humble. When Boaz finally addressed Ruth, and he told her, he said, you just stay in my field and you follow the other girls that are my servants and you pick up the grain and when you're thirsty, you go get water from the jars that the men have filled. And look at her response. She bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? Later she says, you have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I don't have the standing of even one of your servants. I'm lower than your servants. In Israel, I'm lower than your pets. I'm nobody. I'm hated here. Why would you show me such kindness? She stayed humble. See, don't you know that when Boaz came around and said, oh, listen, young lady, you just stay here and you go ahead and keep picking up the remnants and you get a drink of water. Ruth could have become indignant as a Moab who didn't like Israelites either and say, well, what do you think? I don't need your leftovers, buddy. You know, I can take care of myself. She could be filled with pride, see? Later on, remember, at the end of the day, Boaz invites her over to have bread and vinegar with him and to eat roasted barley and that. And she could have come over and she goes, oh, I see what you want. Yeah, I'm not dumb, you know. And just because I'm a Moab, no, it doesn't mean that you can just have whatever you want from me. And if you got stinking thinking going on, buddy, you better just change your mind because it's not going to happen. I'll tell you right now. She could have copped an attitude with him, right? But she chose not to. She chose the path of humility. See, she goes, because she understands only through our humility is God free to work in our life. Amen. We cop an attitude, and we get filled with pride, and we get filled with skepticism of everyone and anything around us, and we're wallowing in self-pity instead of humility, then we're not positioned. We have not positioned ourselves to a place where God can do something for us, see? See, we got to choose the right God now, because the only one has the resources to save us. We got to stay engaged. We can't sit around and be paralyzed by fear or wallow in self-pity. And we need to stay humble, realizing that we have no idea where God's kinsman redeemer is coming from. We need to keep what's doing right. What moved Boaz's heart towards Ruth? Why did he respond the way that he responded? Well, the story tells us. See, in Ruth 2:11 and 12, Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. See, Ruth could have got bitter like Naomi, her mother-in-law. She could have blamed God. She could have been angry. She could have been distrustful of all the Jews because the Jews didn't like her and they weren't welcoming her. She could have responded with similar anger and prejudice and everything towards them. But instead, she continued to do what was right because it was right. It was the right thing to do. She continued, even though her mom had become bitter, her mother-in-law had become bitter, even though her mother-in-law was cursing God, and even though her mother-in-law had abandoned God, and all that, she didn't follow suit. She said, you know, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to live above it. I'm going to get out of the house. I'm going to go to work. Because if you don't work, you don't eat. And I'm not going to allow bitterness to set in. I'm not going to fear the Jews. I've chosen the God of Israel, and the God of Israel is going to be my kinsman redeemer. See, she continued to do what is right. And because of that, Boaz says, may the Lord repay you for what you have done. See, God is always in a position to repay us for the right things that we do, especially when it's the exact opposite that we want to do. When we want to go back to our old ways, we want to go back to our old friends, we want to medicate our feelings of fear and our feelings of bitterness and anger and hopelessness. See, when hard times hit, just keep doing what's right. Hard times hit at work and everyone else is cutting corners and cutting illegal contracts and shady deals and that. Don't you do that. Think, well, I need money. If I don't do that, I'm not going to get money. Now, you trust God for the money. You keep doing what's right. You keep doing what's right in your marriage. You keep doing what's right in your family. You keep doing what's right in your workplace. You keep doing what's right in culture. You just do what's right. And you are opening up God's provision for you, God's protection for you. Just keep doing right. Hard times hit, stay open to opportunity. One day, Naomi comes to Ruth and says, I got a plan. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go take a shower and pour perfume over yourself, get your best clothes on. I want you to go down and I want you to seek out Boaz. And when he falls asleep, I want you to go lay at his feet and uncover his feet. Ruth could have gone, have you lost your mind? Are you out of your mind, Naomi? You want me to do what? She said, listen, we got a good thing going here. We found favor in Boaz's heart, and he's feeding us, and we got a thing going here. Let's not push our luck here by trying to push this thing any further than what we got right now. Why do you think that he would be interested? I mean, he's been nice, but I am a Moabite, and he's not going to take. She could have just dissed everything that Naomi was suggesting. None of it made sense in the cultural, in the situation. Didn't make sense. But what did she say? I'll do it. I will do whatever you say. And she did exactly that. And listen, when hard times hit, you need to stay open to opportunity. You know, you lose your job, and they'll say, well, I'm not going to settle for a job in any less of a position than I got right now. Don't be a fool. You know, number one, God may have had you lose your job because you hate your job. And you've been praying for a new job, and all of a sudden God takes your job away, and you're, oh, God, what'd you do? I answered your prayer. Surprise, I answer prayer. See, and God may be moving you right along, see? And stay open to that opportunity. You might take a lesser job at first, but God's given you that because he's got plans to advance you there to where the other place you would have never been advanced to. And so sometimes you've got to take a step back to take three steps forward. And so stay open to opportunity. Finally, live to leave a legacy. Live to leave a legacy. Boaz marries Ruth. They give birth to Obed, who ultimately gives birth to Jesse, who gives birth to David, arguably the greatest king of Israel and the one who, through it, David's line, Messiah comes into the world and brings salvation for all mankind. Now, Boaz didn't know that was going to happen. Ruth didn't know that was going to happen. Naomi didn't know that was going to happen. But God did. But here's the deal. Boaz had lived his life. Ruth had lived her life in a way that positioned them to be able to be used by God. And ultimately, this was their legacy. Jesus, the Savior of the world, came from their union. Why? Because she chose the right God. She stayed engaged. She stayed humble. She kept doing what was right. She lived her life to allow God to do something amazing through it. She lived, Boaz lived, to leave a legacy. Listen, how we handle hard times can have a long-lasting impact on our families for generations to come. How you're handling that hardship in your life right now isn't just going to impact you. Not just going to impact you as a couple. It has the potential to impact positively or negatively generations to come. Albert E. Winship, 1800, did a study on the descendants of Jonathan Edwards, a great colonial preacher. And as they traced their family line, found out that through their lineage, and this is back in the 1800s, no telling where it is now, there were 430 ministers, 86 university professors, 13 university chancellors, 75 authors, 7 members of Congress, 1 vice president. They were all from his line. All of them lived a life to live a legacy. Another sociologist, Richard Lewis Dungdale, who was a sociologist, traced another family's genealogy through a notorious criminal named Max Jukes and found out through his line 76 other criminals were born, 18 brothel keepers, 120 prostitutes, 200 homeless, 600 admitted alcoholics, 2 mentally insane. See, how we respond to our hardships has generational impact. Live to leave a legacy. Don't know how it's going to happen, but live so that it can happen. What do you do? Choose your gods carefully. Stay engaged. Stay humble. Keep doing what's right. Stay open to opportunities. All of that is living to leave a legacy. Let's bow our heads. Important message today. But it's just all a fulfillment of God's promise in Romans 8:28, that God works for the good in all things for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Maybe you're living with hard times right now. Your life has taken a twist, and it's just really difficult, maybe seemingly unbearable. Well, then today's biblical story is for you. It's a lesson for you. It's a lesson. It gives you something to hold on to. It gives you something to implement in your life while you're enduring the hard times, knowing that God is your kinsman redeemer. God is able to rescue you from wherever you are. And God has a heart like Boaz to do it in spite of yourself. Think of Naomi. At the end of the story, they lay the baby in Naomi's lap. And they say, Naomi has a son. Naomi, who acted with bitterness and resentment towards God, God still made Romans 8:28 fulfilled in her life. He still gave her a grandson, a kinsman redeemer, to take care of her for the rest of her life. God, we thank you that you are our kinsman redeemer. God, that you are aware of our hardships, aware of our challenges, our struggles. And God, just as you used Boaz to relieve this desperate situation of Ruth and Naomi, God, you have the same love towards us. I pray for those men and women in our church today who are hurting, who are having hard times. Lord, I pray that today's message might be just a little beam of hope. It might be a beam of direction. And that they might use this formula that Ruth demonstrated through her faithful following of you during a desperate time in her life, to show that there is a way out. And there are things that we can do while we're enduring our hard time. And Lord, just believe that you're taking us to that place of deliverance for your glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.